The ransomware drama continues to bubble up as one group has apparently taken the money and run. Also, AI continues to wreak havoc by producing inappropriate images, freaking out businesses who want to use these tools to make a lot of money. We'll talk about those stories and more on this episode of Today in Tech. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Today in Tech. I'm Keith Shaw. The guy behind the monitors is Chris. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
Having a good week so far?
So far.
All right. And joining us for his third appearance as guest co-host is Paul Desmond, a veteran technology journalist and co-founder of Saratoga B2B Group. Welcome back for number three, Paul.
Thanks, Keith. Glad to be here.
I can tell you're ready to jump into this thing. So you sent me, you sent me a link after our last show. And you started it out with an apology going, oh, God, we got to talk about ransomware again, because that was when the news of this Black Cat ransomware group and the attack against Change Healthcare was going on. Right. So for anybody that's not familiar with this, apparently the people that run the Black Cat ransomware group, also known as AlphaV, A-L-P-H-V, was they took down Change Healthcare, which is this company that acts as a liaison between doctors and pharmacies, and basically to approve whether or not a pharmacy, like, you can buy the drugs that you need at a lower price. Correct? Does this sound right, Paul?
I think that is right. Yes.
And so they were able to take down Change Healthcare. And so there were a bunch of stories about how you know, this is a critical part of the infrastructure. Some articles were comparing this to the pipeline attack from a few years ago, you know, big deal. And then it turns out that apparently, now this is not, hasn't been validated yet, but apparently Change Healthcare paid the ransom. And so what then happened is that, and apparently this ransom was $22 million. So this is from, if you go to the, this is the Brian Krebs website that he runs. There are indications that U.S. healthcare giant Change Healthcare has made a $22 million extortion payment to the infamous Black Cat ransomware group as the company struggles to bring back services online in a cyber attack, amid a cyber attack that has disrupted prescription drug services nationwide for weeks. However, the cyber criminal who claims to have given Black Cat access to Change's network says the crime gang cheated him out of their share of the ransom, and that they still have the sensitive data Change reportedly paid the group to destroy. Meanwhile, the affiliate's disclosure appears to have prompted Black Cat to basically cease operations entirely. So the indication that we're getting, and I've read a couple articles on this, is that they're like, oh my gosh, we got $22 million from someone, from this group, from this company. We're like, we're getting out of here. Now, there's some speculation that maybe because of the stuff that was going on with Lockbit, and how they were exposed or caught by this law enforcement group, that they're like, oh, the heat's on now, so we're going to kind of get out while the getting's good. But now it's funny because, again, then you hear stories of like, well, so this was the guy that gave the ransomware group access to these servers, and he's not getting paid. So, again, this just it's just more kind of like, this is made for a TV movie. This is a more drama that we're seeing. And it's amazing whenever I see another story around this. Paul, any thoughts?
Yeah. As you mentioned, there's a number of angles here.
Yeah.
Let's start with that last one you mentioned. You know, the way these groups operate is the ransomware group, Black Hat, you know, has the technology that their affiliates, I guess they call them, use. And they're the ones who do the actual work. They break into your network and try to plant the ransomware. And whoever did that planting in this case is claiming they didn't get paid.
Right.
So, and normally they get the lion's share of the money. It's like, you know, anywhere from 60 to 90%. In fact, this group had been taken down back in December, I think, by the FBI, Black Cat.
Yeah, there I can't remember which attack it was, but yeah, there were indications that they got taken down or
right.
Partially.
So they came back, and as you know, as part of like goodwill, I guess, with their affiliates, they raised the percentage that the affiliates were supposed to get. And then, you know, it's hard to know who to believe in these things. You know, now, you know, the Alpha V or Black Cat guys are saying, you know, we're done. Like you said, we're just taking our $22 million and going home. who knows? You know, I kind of doubt that myself. But yeah, can you believe criminals when they tell you anything? You know, no.
So, you know, the interesting part about this is that over the last couple of years, when we would talk to other guests on the show about ransomware, and there was the big MGM Resorts hack from last year, and all of these experts that we were having on the show were telling us that it was becoming more and more like these groups were becoming more and more like little mini businesses. Like they were setting up customer service aspects, and they were being polite in their takedown of the victims. They were like, yeah, we'll give you, you know, we're going to tell you how we did it. And then we're also going to tell you how to retrieve your data, as if this was just basically like going to the bank or, you know, procuring a bunch of new computers for your systems. You have customer service and you have installation and support and IT and all this other stuff. And to me, that was amazing because at the heart of this, we're still criminal organizations. And so it's not surprising that now we see criminals acting like criminals. And, you know, and again, there's no honor amongst thieves is the old saying. So, should I feel bad that the guy that broke in to change healthcare suddenly doesn't have his share of the money? No, I don't feel bad for him. He was the one that was dealing with these criminals in the first place.
Right. And he still might get paid because, you know, he probably still has the data, right? That they're holding ransom for. So there could be another.
Yeah. Yes. If he still has the data, does he then go and try to talk to the people at Change Healthcare? They'll be like, "Well, we already paid you. You know,
right?"
And of course, they're not admitting that they paid either. Right. You know, go ahead.
There was this guy Fabian Wosar quoted.
I was gonna get
in
ahead.
The Krebs.
Yeah,
in the Krebs story, and this seems more likely to me. He said that Alpha V Black Cat did not get seized. They are exit scamming their affiliates. It's blatantly obvious when you check the source code of the new takedown notice. So in other words, they're claiming they're out of business, but they're really not. They just want all the money.
Right.
Or they're trying to keep all the money.
Right.
That makes sense to me. I mean, that sounds like exactly the sort of thing a criminal would do. Is, you know, try to scam the other criminals. So.
Yeah, but so well, do you think that this is it for this, or are they just going to go into hiding for a few years? But then if you come out of hiding, you know, if you feel like the heat's off and you're like, okay, let's get back into business, do you think that any of their affiliates are going to trust them?
That'll be the problem.
Yeah. Or is it, you know?
I think it's not uncommon for them to, you know, maybe go away and then come back under a different name. So then they'd have to build up credibility again.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know exactly how that works in the criminal world.
I have a feeling we're going to start seeing a bunch of movies that are either based on this, or this will be a Law and Order episode at some point that stolen from the headlines. It'll be the thing. And maybe we'll get some more insights from how these criminal gangs operate. But it did feel like that the people that were telling us don't pay the ransom, don't pay the ransom, don't pay the ransom are now doing a victory lap as well. Cause they're like, this is what happens when you pay. But again, if it was United Change Healthcare? Yeah, if it was Change Healthcare that did pay this ransom, I can understand why they were paying the ransom. I mean, they were losing a lot of money and potential business, and you had the government looking into this, like, and, you know, you had people that needed these medications that were like, hey, I need this to live. Again, just showing you that ransomware gangs do not have that soft heart that we thought. Maybe they're going after the people that have the money. No, they're going after the people that might be desperate if you get into their systems.
Right.
Have you seen anything where there were any indications of how they were able to get into these systems yet? Or has that, I was so focused on the drama of the gangs that I didn't realize whether or not there was anything about how they got in.
No, I haven't seen anything either.
Okay. I'll have to go look that up somewhere.
But you know, to me, one of the, maybe the bigger point here is like I said, that Alpha V or Black Cat was nabbed by the FBI back in only December, you know, just a few months ago. And now they're back. And, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, we had the FBI claiming they had done in Lockbit.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Lockbit claims to be back. I don't know that we've actually seen any evidence of that yet, but
Yeah, the Brian Crouch story also had some updates there, where they were threatening to release Fulton County, Georgia data with the whole Trump lawsuit stuff. And basically, Fulton County says, we're not going to pay. The deadline ended, and then it just vanished from their website. So either they called their bluff, or they're waiting maybe for another opportunity at some point to try to get some money out of it. But again, who knows? It could be just another, you know. Or again, with my tinfoil hat on, I could be, maybe the feds are playing this game too. Maybe they're in control and pretending to be, this group or that group or whatever. Again, great drama. So, and again, what's the bottom rule, Paul? Like, what's the bottom line for a company that doesn't want to get involved in any of this drama?
Go get professional help from, from a managed security service provider.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
Secure your systems, train your employees, be better.
Sure. All of that. But, as I said before, I just don't think your average run of the mill company is going to have the personnel that it takes and the expertise to do this job 24/7 and be on the lookout for signs of malware, ransomware, any kind of intrusion. It's just, it's never ending. So I would turn it over to the professionals.
Yeah. And again, I'm hoping that maybe the law enforcement will pick up as well. If they get a sense that these people are on the run, it does feel like maybe they can catch them a little bit quicker than they would, or I don't know. Who knows? All right. We're going to go on to another story that I like to call basically AI people whining. Or companies that are whining. Where did I go? Oh, whiny feuds. Chris, go to the OpenAI Elon Musk story. All right. So I didn't want to talk about this initially when Elon Musk filed that lawsuit against OpenAI. But now that OpenAI has kind of responded, I feel like we need to talk about this. Recently, OpenAI publicly responded to a lawsuit brought by co-founder Elon Musk, highlighting apparent hypocrisy on the part of the now billionaire and early backer of the company. In its response, OpenAI reproduced old emails from Musk in which the Tesla and SpaceX CEO encouraged the rising startup to raise at least $1 billion in funding and agreed that it should start being less open over time and not share the company's science with the public. If you've got a bunch of emails, like, is this lawsuit going to go anywhere, Paul? I mean, because you're aware of the lawsuit, right?
Yeah. Who knows? But you would think Elon Musk, would have better things to do. Thank God he left OpenAI is all I can say, because who knows what kind of shape they'd be in if he stuck around. But
yeah, I think The reason that he basically sued them because he felt that OpenAI going after billions of dollars of funding and changing the focus of the company goes against the original ideas, which were keep this, again, it's in their name, OpenAI. It's, keep things open and benefit, create AI for the benefit of humanity. And this was a lot of the reasons why the whole Sam Altman drama happened at the end of last year, was because Sam Altman was out there trying to raise money and work on new projects and get new subscribers and, get all this money and turn it into a for-profit thing instead of this other idea. But I don't understand why it has to be Elon Musk who then kind of does this lawsuit, especially now that they've got evidence that says, oh, this is what you should do, is you should try to make a lot of money and make it less open. So I don't know. It's basically a great shot across the bow from the OpenAI folks, unless I'm missing something here.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Who knows? Maybe Elon will change his mind. He seems to does that quite frequently and just say, never mind.
He seems to like to actually be involved in lawsuits too all the time. And there's a lot of lawsuits that are involved with Elon Musk. I don't know. Maybe when we get him on this show, we'll ask him all those questions. Like, why are you doing all this lawsuit stuff? And then they'll sue us, right? Yeah. But the other whiny feud I want to talk about is between Epic Games and Apple. And I know that you don't do a lot of game coverage, but it does relate to Apple's support of the whole developer ecosystem. So apparently Epic Games was the one that sued Apple over its inability to create its own app store. And Epic Games, you know, they wanted to do, there was like a 30% fee that you would have to pay in royalties to Apple in order to be on the App Store. There was a lawsuit. They won. Epic won against Google, but they lost against Apple. And so now they're saying that Apple has retaliated by basically rejecting Epic Games' application for a developer account that it would use to launch an App Store for iPhones in Europe. And this is according to Epic CEO Tim Sweeney. He said Apple's decision was in retaliation over the gaming company's antitrust lobbying, its lawsuit against Apple, and some of Sweeney's social media posts, citing emails from Apple App Store chief Phil Schiller and Apple lawyers. Quote, "The manner in which Apple is going about killing Epic here as a competitor to the App Store is super egregious," Sweeney said on a call with reporters. "This is the medieval feudal lord mounting the skulls of their former enemies on their castle walls." Wow, that is some nice hyperbole there.
That sounds about right. That makes sense.
I wonder who wrote that.
It's the first public example of Apple denying competing app stores in Europe, a move that could raise scrutiny of the iPhone maker's plans to comply with a new antitrust law, which goes into effect like as we speak. Right, Paul?
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess by the time this airs, it'll be last week. But
yeah.
But yeah, so that's what makes this interesting to me. I mean, it's going to be one of the first tests of this law, I guess, because, this used to be par for the course for Apple, didn't it? You know, being highly protective of their App Store and everything that goes into it, you know, like a medieval feudal lord. And but now, I mean, there's this new, what is it called, the Europe Digital Markets Act, I think.
Yeah.
It's an attempt to rein in the power of Apple and just a handful of others. What is Apple,
does
Amazon,
it, does it feel like
Google?
That Epic Games has the European Union on its side then with these, like, could this law force Apple to start being more open and not demand this 30% cut of the sales?
It does. Yeah. I mean, I think this could be the first big test.
Yeah. I think Spotify is another app that's trying to see what will happen. They might be, I think I saw a story on The Verge that said Spotify will soon be testing this new law for Apple to see if they can get a cut. Because I think, it's not buying music. It's more selling subscriptions through the app, I think, is what Spotify is trying to do. So, but again, I just like lumping that in I was talking to Chris about this off the air. It used to be that there were all of these tech companies that if you were a fan of technology, you could always feel good about backing one company or another. But now it feels like every company in the big tech space has got some negatives associated with them that make you go, who do I root for anymore? Like, it used to be that Google was the upstart against Microsoft or the browser world, or you'd be like, Google had that phrase, don't do evil or don't be evil. But now, right, Google has its own problems. Apple used to be like the upstart against the PC and Microsoft. Now they're being seen as evil. Meta and Facebook against some of the other social media things. They've got their own problems. Is it just because we have so much news about these companies, or is it now par for the course that a company is just, if it gets too big, it can become quote unquote evil?
Yeah, I think maybe the companies today, they don't want to share in their profits. That's what this seems like with Apple. Like, is it really a security issue? Or do you think they just don't want to open up the market to competitors?
I think it's probably the latter. Yeah, they claim it's the whole privacy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Could this all go away if they just said, we don't want a 30% cut anymore. We'll take 10 or 15.
Yeah.
I don't think that the Apple shareholders would be happy with something like that. Again, that's a problem with a public company. But they would get some good kind of feel good moments from that. But maybe Apple feels that they're stuck, that they have to defend the castle wall, so to speak. I think it's more about profits and less about.
Yeah, that's what I think too. That's what I think too. But
Paul, anything to add there?
To me, I'm looking at it more almost through a political realm, because it's clear that Europe is taking the lead on forcing these big companies to open things up and give users a choice. I mean, that's basically the idea, right, as I understand it, behind their Digital Markets Act, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah.
And I read today, the White House, as this law was taking shape, over the last couple of years, they sent a couple of letters raising concerns, but it was far from a full-throated defense of these U.S. companies. You know, I think five out of the six companies this thing affects are U.S.-based companies. Because at the same time, we had the war in Ukraine going on. So my sense is the Biden administration, you know, didn't want to ruffle any feathers on this issue that would upset the whole war effort. And I can understand that.
I mean, doesn't it feel like that, again, Europe is leading when it comes to a lot of protecting the consumer and protecting the little guy?
Absolutely.
Know, from the privacy stuff, the GDPR stuff. It's like, yeah, don't you feel like sometimes you'd be like, why can't we do that? Like, why can't we do this in America? And it can't just be because we have a horrible political system that's polarized. Or is it just that? It could just be that.
Well, I think it's you know, we put such a premium on freedom and, you know, there's personal freedom to do whatever you want, you know, including carrying guns that can kill all kinds of people really quickly. You know, but that's more important than passing sensible laws.
Yeah, but don't you think privacy should be an issue that the government should be, or at least, the people at least, from a privacy standpoint, you would think, yeah, we should protect data. But then they're like, no, but Facebook comes in and goes, yeah, but we need this to survive. We need all of your data.
I mean, other companies protect our data as well, you know, like Google, Microsoft, you know what I mean?
Well, but again, am I just throwing them into this whole, every big company is evil because of all the data they collect now.
You're saying that that's what Apple is saying about the other companies?
No, like, that's what I'm saying about every other company.
Oh, right.
Like, okay. I don't know what big tech company I can trust anymore.
Yeah, sure. No, I believe
and that's
it.
That's why I was asking. I'm asking you guys for help. You know, have I gone too far down this rabbit hole of not trusting anybody? Like there was another story that happened this week. I don't have a clip. I don't have a link for it. But the people at Meta came out and said they're investing all of this money on a new platform for videos. They're going to combine, because they've been buying all of these NVIDIA AI chips, mm-hmm. and they're going to now have this new platform that will use artificial intelligence to recommend more videos for people to watch. And it'll be across their Instagram Reels, the long form video, and then shared video or something like that. And the first thing I thought about is like, well, I don't want to have Meta, which already knows so much about me. I don't need them recommending more videos to me. And they do through Instagram anyway. I just don't want them to do this to me as a user. And so I feel like, you know, from Meta standpoint, it makes sense, because it's like, hey, we're taking three different systems and we're consolidating them. And then we're going to get better at this recommendation engine stuff. And it's all good. But on the other hand, it just feels evil when they start using AI, or it just feels like this is going to go down some more invasive privacy for me. Like, they're going to be like, oh, Keith, you've watched a lot of videos about, you know, puppy dogs and beagles. And so we're going to just, you know, we're going to use that against you at some point. I don't know. Paul,
well, I think you're exactly right. And you want to avoid that? It sounds like you're going to have to move to Europe.
Yeah. I just wish there would be more people that have that sensibility. And again, nothing against Europe. It's just, it's interesting to see that dynamic of, and again, most companies will fall in line because they want to do business in Europe. And so then they'll change their policies to support that. But then over here, it's the Wild West. I mean, we already saw that, I think, with TikTok, right? Where the European Union forced TikTok to change its algorithm so that it did not recommend horrible videos, where in the US it's like, whatever you want to do. And in China itself, they give younger users educational videos and things that will benefit the planet, rather than in America, where you can see videos about self-harm and drug use and body image stuff and all this other kind of stuff. We're going to be talking about that on future episodes, by the way, Paul. Just, I've been doing a lot of research on this social media stuff, and it's got me irritated up to here. All right.
Well, I did see one last point on this. That Congress has launched a task force to look at AI regulation, at least. So,
ooh, a task force.
So there you go. Congress is on it, Keith. Don't worry about it.
We can trust our elected representatives to do what's right.
I think they need to make a logo for this task force. Make like a badge and then sell jackets.
I'm pretty sure that they're going to use ChatGPT to create a logo for this new task force. And maybe then the task force can recommend a committee.
We need another Space Force.
Well, yeah, the Space Force people, they haven't been doing much lately, right? Or this will fall under the TSA budget, and we'll have to spend, or IRS, and we'll have to spend more money on agents so that we can get to the bottom of this jacket logo issue.
There you go.
All right. Moving on. AI keeps doing goofy stuff. All right. So, nope. Go to the other CNBC one, the Microsoft Engineer. You have that one, right?
Microsoft Engineer. Nope. Oh. Is it the Mammoths?
Nope.
No, I don't got it.
All right, well, just go back to the three-shot or the two-shot then. All right. So a Microsoft engineer named Shane Jones, who worked at Microsoft for 6 years, has been testing the company's AI image generator in his free time, and he told CNBC that he is disturbed by his findings. He warned Microsoft of sexual and violent content that the product, Copilot Designer, is creating, but the company is not taking appropriate action. So this week or last week, Jones escalated the matter, sending letters to FTC Chair Lina Khan and to Microsoft's board, which were reviewed by CNBC. There you go. There's the story. And I think in the description, Chris, see if you can read part of that story below what he was doing, because this was the early Copilot. This used to be the Bing Image AI Creator, and then they rebranded it Copilot Designer. And so we found it on the earlier versions, but he says that this stuff still exists.
Yeah, it looks like he was just noodling around with Copilot Designer.
Okay, I've got it. I've got the story up now.
I think he was
AI service depicted demons and monsters alongside terminology related to abortion rights, teenagers with assault rifles, sexualized images of women in violent tableaus, and underage drinking and drug use. All of those scenes generated in the past 3 months have been recreated by CNBC this week using the Copilot tool, which was originally called Bing Image Creator. It was an eye-opening moment, said Jones, who continues to test the image generator. It's when I first realized, wow, this is not really a safe model. He has worked for Microsoft for 6 years and is currently a principal software engineering manager at corporate headquarters in Redmond, Washington. He said he doesn't work on Copilot in a professional capacity, rather as a red teamer. Jones is among an army of employees and outsiders who, in their free time, choose to test the company's AI technology and see where problems may be surfacing. Jones was so alarmed by his experience that he started internally reporting his findings in December. While the company acknowledged his concerns, it was unwilling to take the product off the market. Jones said Microsoft referred him to OpenAI, and when he didn't hear back from the company, he posted an open letter on LinkedIn asking the startup's board to take down DALL-E 3, which is the latest version of the AI model, for an investigation. The legal department, of course, Microsoft responds via the legal department, telling Jones to remove his post immediately, which he complied to. And then in January, he wrote a letter to U.S. senators about the matter. I'm surprised that he still has a job at this point. I mean, I guess, are you now protected under the Whistleblower Act?
Maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a real mess. I mean, Microsoft clearly didn't take this seriously enough. I mean, the bit that struck me that you read, he was a red teamer among an army of employees and outsiders who, in their free time, choose to test the company's AI technology. So Microsoft is relying on the goodwill of its employees to test this stuff in their free time.
I know. That's insane. Like, why are you not hiring an army of people and paying them to do this?
Right.
Yeah, it boggles my mind. I mean, we talked about this on the show last week where we were like, oh yeah, you know, if you're going to try to test this stuff, try to find the people with dirty minds to try to see if it still generates.
I mean, it's surprising, but not surprising, because I feel like this is just them cutting corners. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't invest in QC, you know, any quality control or what, you know, whatnot before you release it. This was released to the public, right?
Yeah, Copilot Designer? Yeah, anybody can use this. We could probably try to recreate things if we wanted to.
Well, I guess what I mean is like,
I did.
Did you?
I tried yesterday, because one of the terms that created these gory images was pro-choice.
Okay.
That's it. Just pro-choice, and the result was a demon with sharp teeth about to eat an infant, among other things. So yesterday I went into this thing and I put in pro-choice, and it flagged it as an inappropriate prompt and told me, you know, if I keep it up, they're going to kick me out.
Right. And I think what they then did, CNBC tried this, I think, with the prompt teenagers 420 party. Jones said he was able to generate numerous images of underage drinking and drug use. He shared those images with CNBC. Then CNBC tried to do it, and they couldn't, with, if they used the numbers, it was told it was inappropriate, but then they spelled out 420, right, and then got, and then, you know, and got some weird images from there. But then apparently they also, the Copilot tool produced images of Disney characters such as Elsa from Frozen, Snow White, Mickey Mouse, Star Wars characters, potentially violating both copyright laws and Microsoft policies. Images viewed by CNBC included an Elsa branded handgun, Star Wars branded Bud Light cans, and Snow White's likeness on a vape.
All right, I'm sorry. That's just funny.
That is funny.
That's just funny.
So not only are they doing things that are inappropriate and potentially not something useful for children, but now they're breaking copyright law, or they're, it's like, oh boy.
Yeah, the other thing that really got me though is, you know, so this guy can't get anyone at Microsoft to pay attention. So he posts his findings on LinkedIn,
yep,
which gets Microsoft's legal attention, and they tell him to take it down. And then Microsoft spokesperson tells CNBC, we are committed to addressing any and all concerns employees have in accordance with our company policies and appreciate employee efforts in studying and testing our latest technology to further enhance its safety. No, they're not.
Yeah, they're not. I
mean, that's just complete BS.
Yeah, it's just a matter of, you know, just try and do whatever you want. And then, you know, Microsoft will figure it out and find it, and then they'll just ban the word. All right, I want to give an example. So I was able to do something on Dolly 3. I'm going to give you the story. So whenever I test some of these image generators, I have this image in my head of a fake album cover of someone sitting on a bed listening to headphones while a nuclear apocalypse is happening outside. In my initial attempts, it was just all fuzzy images. It was just not very good. But the model has been getting better and better and better. And now I can't use apocalypse, apparently. I can't use that word. So I have to change my words, and I have to use words like dystopian, or, you know, you can't do anything around war or anything super violent. In using the new tool, I was able to, so, you know, I would have the person on the bed was an adult male figure. And so then at one point I was able to have him, so that like it would draw him, but then it would draw him like in a shirt and shorts. And I was able to get the shirt to come off. And then after I did that, I changed the gender from male to female, and boom, I was able to get basically the image to draw a shirtless female. And it didn't, you know, and so I guess if you, now again, there's a dark web, which I have heard about, of there's all of these tools that you can do so much more, that are in the dark areas that Microsoft and OpenAI are not supporting. But there's all these models where you can just, you know, and then, you know, we see stories of stuff in Britain where you can upload a photo of someone, and then there's an app that will basically take their clothes off and give you the image. Like, there's some real dark stuff going on there, and we are not even close to reining it in. Which leads me to the next story, which is the first one about AI. There was a survey from a global survey of more than 300 business leaders by MIT Technology Review Insights and Australia-based telecoms company Telstra revealed that only 9% of the companies surveyed were significantly using AI. While most leaders were optimistic about AI's potential and expect to widen its usage, currently even the early adopters of this technology have deployed it for limited business areas. Quote, there's a misconception about how easy it is to run mature enterprise-ready generative AI. This was quoted by Stella Solar, inaugural director of Australia's National Artificial Intelligence Center. Its adoption may require companies to, quote, improve data quality and capability, privacy measures, AI skilling, and implement organization-wide safe and responsible AI governance. So, again, we've talked to a lot of people on this show, and most of the people have told us that enterprises and businesses are in the pilot phase, and they're just currently testing it. And the very few rare cases where they might be deployed, sometimes, you know, if they deploy too quickly, then you get mistakes like the car dealer offering a car for a dollar, or that Air Canada incident, you know. So the media is ready to report on all the mistakes. But then when you see stories like the Microsoft thing or the Google thing with the whole historic, show me a historic Nazi, I just don't think people are ready for AI, or their companies are not going to be willing to invest if stories like this keep coming out. Paul?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I think you got to just have the right expectation. I mean, the story, that same story you were just quoting, did say that early adopters in 2023 had deployed AI for automating repetitive low-value tasks that don't require a lot of human supervision. And that's absolutely makes sense. I mean, that's, you know, the low-hanging fruit here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, it's like, you know, the old Gartner.
Is it a case where if they go after the low-hanging fruit, it's okay, but they shouldn't be too ambitious because then you're going to run into some serious hallucination issues and potential disasters?
Yeah. I mean, you have to, you know, be cognizant of what AI is ready to do. And it can handle the low-hanging fruit, you know, these automating repetitive tasks. I mean, that's been going on for a long time.
Right, like, but that was not generative AI either. That was more machine learning-based systems and big code, right?
Correct. Yeah. And, you know, the generative AI, you know, kind of melding that into these large language models is going to take more time. But, you know, I think that work is progressing. Yeah, I'd say that story makes sense. I mean, the numbers they were throwing around, 9% significantly using AI, that sounds about right, you know, given where we are. And the thing I was going to say, you think about Gartner's hype cycle that we always used to care about. And I think stage two was peak of inflated expectations, which I think pretty well describes where we are now with AI.
Right. I did an episode about 5 months ago saying, are we about to hit the trough of disillusionment? And I think I may have jumped the gun on that a little bit, but I would agree that we are inflating the expectations around AI. And at some point, there's going to be companies that will pull back their investments. I think maybe at the moment they're afraid to because they don't want to be seen as falling behind. But at some point, the bean counters are going to be like, why are we wasting all of our money on this stuff if it's not going to work?
Yeah, that'll be interesting because, you know, I don't know that I've seen a technology where the expectations were quite this high.
Well, I've seen ones that have been hyped as much, but the difference on this is that people really believe that this stuff will work, or that people can see the value of this stuff where they couldn't before. I guess the other, but a lot of people still don't understand how it works. They still feel like, again, with ChatGPT and you type in something and it produces a poem, it produces a limerick, it produces a story in like that, or it produces an image just like that. And there are small little use cases where that's really valuable for individual users or someone that's trying to like create a logo. When you talk about the scale though of a business trying to do all this stuff, then it becomes tricky. But again, this is also technology where you can do so many different things. And that's why we see voice cloning. That's why we see deepfake videos. That's why we see image generations, text. That's why we see coding. You know, there's all sorts of things that can be generated. And all of these all serve different markets and companies. So I think that's part of the allure of this technology as well. And then you get the whole large language model. And it keeps technology journalists busy with content to talk about.
Well, that's for sure. But, I mean, to me, if you're a business and you know, you have a use case, you have to understand what use cases are going to make sense for AI as it stands today, you know, with what it's capable of doing. And there's plenty of them out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But just, you know, you can't expect it to do everything. So, and there's plenty of smart people in these companies who get that. You know, they understand how like ChatGPT or generative AI works. And as long as you have at least some understanding of how it works, then I think it's not that hard to sort of grapple with, okay, well, then it can probably handle this use case, but not that one.
Hey, Chris, I want to ask you, have you become disillusioned with any AI stuff you've used, or are you still in that experimental phase in your life?
It's in the back of my mind.
You flirted with some AI tools in the video work, right?
Yeah. There was a third-party app that we use for Premiere to edit podcasts and stuff like that, which makes sense because podcasts is a very linear format, and AI can do that easily. But
yeah,
I mean, the problem is it's a monthly subscription. It's $30 a month.
Right.
That's
right.
A lot.
Yeah. In order to reach some of the prices that they're charging, you have to.
You have to be a small business or
yeah.
or an enterprise.
Like I subscribed to the ChatGPT Plus from OpenAI, and that's $20 a month. Mm-hmm. And I have to remind myself on a daily basis, hey, just do something to use this subscription. Like, just go. Whether it's trying to get nudie pictures or helping my kids with some logos that they want to create.
I just got rid of mine of that AI app for podcasts.
Yeah,
it's like.
Well, that was a free trial for a month, right? And then you just
continue. But I mean, technically, we could use it, but I didn't want to go through the reimbursement process every month. So I'm just like, yeah, I'd rather just edit it myself.
Just spend it for the whole year, and then you only have to do it once.
Sure, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we also don't know if we would have the volume that is needed for to justify the cost, right?
Yeah, but like yeah. That's the thing. Like, that's what you're seeing too with, you know, these companies that come out with these AI solutions is it's all going to be a service. It's going to be a service.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a product. It's going to be a service. And you're just starting to see all these companies come out with their own iteration of AI. And it's, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm just getting fatigued by it because we see it all the time.
Well, yeah. Plus, like, we have that if you, you can't see it, but the other logo over there is our demo logo. And that's our other show where we have companies come in. And most of the first four or five episodes were all, here's all of the generative AI stuff we added to our existing product. I mean, the hype is out there.
Right. Yeah. It's like, it's out there.
I just would like some people to go like, you know what? We are disillusioned with it and we're not going to, but I don't know if we're there yet. Mm-hmm. Some people say that we might not ever get there if the technology can be improved to the point
where I think,
it doesn't do this
I
bad
think,
stuff. Yeah.
Personally, I think this is just a hype wave right now. And I think it's going to slowly lull out.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say it's not going to progress. It will progress, but it might progress underneath the radar a little bit until some big, you know, until AI reaches this big milestone where it can do something incredible, right? Then it might resurface again, but I think you might see it lull a little bit.
And that's the whole Gartner hype cycle. It's like you get hyped and then you go a little bit down and then it slowly gets better and then the serious people take over.
Yeah, because what I've been seeing more too, like on, you know, just social media, right? All the social media ads, it's like, geez, you're bombarded with all these AI services now. And like, I look at a lot of, like, you know, content creator stuff. So I get a lot of the content creator ads, right?
Yep.
And basically every, you know, content creator resource out there, right, that sells a product, like licensing music or licensing art, they all offer some sort of AI product now.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, mm-hmm. Gotta see another ad like this again. Okay.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, do you remember when Facebook had its big announcement from last year? They did their big event and they came out with those AI personalities because Tom Brady was one of them and Mr. Beast was one and they had another influencer. Remember they were creating AI personas?
Not, you know, I have successfully avoided Facebook for my entire life, so no.
I wanted to see if anybody's actually used any of those things, because we talked about it on the show when they announced it, and then I just realized that, like, I've never used it. I don't even know if they've been integrated into Instagram. I've never seen a pop-up about, hey, maybe I should talk to Tom Brady about sports. Like, it felt like that just came and went, and that was just another big pile of money that Mark Zuckerberg took and flushed down the toilet of his million-dollar bunker in Hawaii that he's trying to build. Wow, you can tell, if you watch this show enough, Paul, you could tell what companies I like and which companies I don't like.
I don't know.
See, the list of the don't likes are getting bigger. That's why I'm having this existential crisis. All right. Last topic I want to talk about, because this might be the hype thing that breaks AI, Paul. And you know what that is? It's basically bringing extinct animals back from the dead. So this is a headline from a Washington Post story. Scientists say that they're closer to reviving mammoths. What could possibly go wrong? All right. A company aiming to bring extinct animals back from the dead said it has taken an elephant-sized step towards genetically resurrecting the woolly mammoth, a wild if contentious goal to repopulate the Arctic tundra with a missing titan. Colossal Bioscience is a biotechnology company based in Dallas. Announced recently, it has produced a line of Asian elephant stem cells that can be coaxed to transform into other types of cells needed to reconstruct the extinct giant, or at least a mammoth-like elephant designed to thrive in the cold. Quote, it's probably the most significant thing so far in the project, end quote, said George Church, a Harvard geneticist and Colossal co-founder. There are many steps in the future. All right. At this point, I'm starting to think, is this an Onion article? Is this something that's, because we've all seen this movie, right?
Yeah, Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Six or seven of them, wasn't it?
Yeah. All right. Then the article goes on and on and on. It's like, for proponents, bringing back vanished animals is a chance to correct humanity's role in the ongoing extinction crisis. Oh, blah, blah, blah.
I'm skipping
over that. Breakthroughs in their field, they say, may yield benefits for animals still with us, including endangered elephants. It's like, so we can use woolly mammoth DNA to help save endangered elephants, I guess.
Okay. I mean, so like, here's the thing, and this is what I'm worried about. They're gonna try to bring back the woolly mammoth.
Yep.
But they're not going to bring back the woolly mammoth. They're going to bring back a murder mammoth. And it's going to go on a rampage, you know,
put it in a zoo.
We're going to have to take it down. Then you're going to split the audience. People are going to be like, no, don't murder the mammoth because it's murdering people. And then there's going to be, you know, no, we need to take it down, you know, because it's causing, and then Armageddon,
yeah.
Apocalypse.
We're going to bring back Harambe. Remember him? Remember that ape that the internet went nuts about, you know?
Yeah, this seems like a really bad idea to me because you know, we don't really know, I guess, why woolly mammoth became extinct in the first place. But there was, the two leading hypotheses are climate change and hunting by humans.
Okay.
And I got to believe with the weapons available to humans back then, it probably wasn't hunting. But so if it was climate change, meaning the Earth, it was the end of an ice age.
Right.
So
we do pretty much know that the asteroid is the one that took out the dinosaurs, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. That was way before. But this was like 4,000 years ago, so not that long. But if it was climate change, I mean, they'd have no shot today. You know, I mean, you just look at the Arctic, it's like, you know.
Well, and that climate change, what, 4,000 years ago, that most likely wasn't caused by us, right?
No. The cooling of the Earth slowed down, right?
Yeah, it was the end of an ice age.
Right,
so right.
You think about that, it was still significantly colder than it is now. So
this leads me to think of that question. Like, why do humans do the things we do? Like, you know what? Maybe there is something to be said about humanity just going away.
I think it's because we can do it is why we do it.
Well, yeah, and just because we, you know, and again, that line from Jurassic Park, you know, just because we can do something doesn't mean that we should.
Yeah,
like
but
this company is making a lot of money, and you know, I don't know what they want to, you know, here's the thing, like maybe they figure out, all right, this woolly mammoth, we're going to bring it back, or it's going to be a new species or whatever, and they'll release it to the wild to help save the planet or whatever that they've got doing, and then then basically the mammoth goes and eats all of the polar bears, and now we've got no polar bears, or it goes and eats the seal somewhere, or it, you know, or it finds something that was actually helping us in humanity. I don't know. Maybe I'm overreaching, but I have seen this movie and it doesn't end well for the visitors to the park. At least they didn't start with dinosaurs. At least they've started with something that might not kill us all immediately.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, and I asked my daughter about this. She's a biochemist major, her junior year. So she raises ethical concerns. She thinks there's ethical concerns here, and I would agree. I mean, I just, you know, it's mainly just because, like you said, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And she's also questioning the whole idea of using elephant stem cells to create something else, I guess, especially, you know, when elephants are having their own problems these days.
Even in, I think, the second or the third Jurassic Park, they were saying, or no, even in the first one, because I remember the little Mr. DNA cartoon. It was, They couldn't figure out the whole genome.
Frog DNA.
So they put frog DNA in it, but they were like, oh, it'll be fine, and that's what caused these dinosaurs to mutate, or was it that the dinosaurs just acted like dinosaurs? And
well, yeah, I think that's why.
That was the point of the movie. Yeah.
Was that the dinosaurs are just dinosaurs and they're doing dinosaur things.
Dinosaurs like, do dinosaur things.
Eating people and
maybe that should be the headline.
Eating other things. to survive.
Yeah. Sometimes you want to just take a scientist that does something like this and just go, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? Yeah. Go see
you
this movie.
Be doing
I might want to send a copy of Jurassic Park to every member of this company and go, have you watched this?
Yeah.
They've made eight
all six
of them.
They're
in all eight movies or however many movies they've made. It's always the same plot. It's always hey, we've got these dinosaurs. Let's do something, or we've been able to create them. And then they run rampant, and then they go, oh, I've got a better idea. Let's build another park and do the same thing over again. And then...
And I mean, if you're smart enough to be able to actually pull this off, wouldn't that be that knowledge be better used at something more immediate, like, you know, curing some horrible disease, say, you know?
Well, so this is what will happen. They'll grow a bunch of woolly mammoths, and then we'll put them in safe areas so that they can't escape and rampage. And then we'll start extracting their DNA or whatever it is to solve these diseases. But then people will get mad about that. They'll be like, you can't test on woolly mammoths. And it's going to be the whole animal testing part. Like, anyway. All right. That's it for this week, Paul. Thanks again for joining us this week. Great job.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks again, Chris.
No problem.
That's all the time we have for today's episode. Don't forget to like the video, subscribe to the channel, add any thoughts that you have below. Tell us what you think about whether or not we should reconstruct woolly mammoth DNA. Join us every week for new episodes of Today in Tech. I'm Keith Shaw. Thanks for watching.